Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to episode 152 of Geek Town Radio. This week I have with me Gray.
Hello.
I love that intro. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good. Well, have you been enjoying your Easter break, seeing as you're a teacher and you're off?
Yes, finally having a little bit of a break. Well, it's not really. I've got a lot to do over Easter, that myth where teachers have all this holiday. I know that.
Yeah.
A lot of work to do.
Yes, always the way with a teacher. Yes, yeah. Very true.
But I have enjoyed 4 days of completely kicking back and resting and doing very little, because I thought I gave myself these 4 days. sort of just chill a little bit, so that's been nice.
So what have you been watching whilst you've been off then?
So I have such a big backlog of like programs to try and clear, but in the last few days in particular I've been sort of like dipping into new things, trying to sort out what I'm going to watch for the summer and finishing a few old things. On Netflix I've started watching the Joe McHale Show. Doing these like one-off like satirical shows, and the first one I didn't like, but then I started watching a couple more and I've got into it a little bit. I'm not all au fait with the American humour, but I'm learning quite quickly. But it is quite dark as well. It's quite sort of black humour, which I like. And so I've been enjoying that. So that's a new episode each week.
Yes, I watched the first one of those. So I might, that's interesting. I might go and watch some more of them because I quite like Joe McHale. So it's good to know it gets better.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good names coming on, and some of the humour I think gets better after episode one. That's sort of my opinion. So I've been downloading that. I finished Everything Sucks. I know I talked about that a month ago, where I thought actually it's a crossover between like the Goldbergs and 13 Reasons Why, because it's a little bit more serious than the comedy, and actually had a really nice ending. It was quite a satisfying and sort of thought out narrative. That I enjoyed it, and I think it's going to get a second season, and it's quite nice. It's quite it wasn't meant to be a comedy, and I think the branding and what Netflix did made it look like it was going to be this fantastic comedy.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was like this song to people who grew up in the 90s, were unsure of their identity and where they came from, and were trying to find their place in the world. And actually it might have been a bit cheesy, but the ending was really nice, so I enjoyed watching and finishing that.
Okay. Cool.
I'm very slow, late to the party, everybody. I've just watched the first episode of Dear White People.
Yes.
And I really like that, so I've downloaded the next couple, and that's going to definitely be something for my train ride back to London. I'm going to be watching that on the way back.
Yeah.
Over on iPlayer, I watched Collateral with Carey Mulligan.
Yes, yeah. Quite a good cast, that. It's
amazing cast.
John Sim, Billy Piper, Carey Mulligan. Yeah, good cast.
So disappointed.
Really? Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. I felt that it should have been better than it was. I enjoyed it, but it didn't really go anywhere that much.
No, went nowhere, and it had an amazing cast, and I feel they were all criminally underused. I don't know why half of them are in it. I couldn't, even now after watching the whole series, I've sat there thinking, why did you have fantastic people like Nicola Walker and John Sim, and they just played really dead roles, and So I was disappointed, yeah. But I read some of the reviews and I don't think I was the only one disappointed in that.
Yeah, the reviews have been a bit very, very kind of mixed on that. And there's, you know, certainly been a lot of negativity about it. So, yeah, but it was I think it was a one-off drama. It was only ever planned as a one-off drama, as far as I'm aware. So
a lot of money thrown at it for that, I tell you as well, to have all those on it. So, I finished Mum. That was a really, really sort of sad ending to a sitcom. Okay. I love Leslie Manville. It's just such a... Again, it sort of touched the heartstrings at the ending, and you couldn't tell if it was a happy or a sad ending. And I think that's what the creator of the sitcom sort of wanted to leave it as. I don't think there's going to be a season three. I think that was it.
Right, okay.
But that was brilliant. And if that doesn't get nominated for BAFTAs, you know, I would just be so surprised.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
And I watched the John Cleese one, Hold the Sunset, which had taken the place of Still Open All Hours.
Yes.
They had Jason Watkins in. And, you know, that was quite good. It didn't make me laugh out loud, but it was just a nice watch-along sitcom I could put on for 30 minutes in the background and not have any problems.
It's very much in the level of Open All Hours and Last of the Summer Wine and, you know, that sort of... It's that style of sitcom. I watched the first episode of it. It seemed perfectly fine for... the type of sitcom it is. It's not really my sort of thing, but it seemed very good at the style of sitcom it was. It's the type of thing I'd quite happily tell my parents to go and watch because I think they'd quite enjoy it, you know.
Definitely. Over on Sky, this is how slow I am. I'm a bit behind everybody. I finally finished watching The Orville.
Yes.
Dave, I watched something sci-fi.
I know. Well done.
And I got through to the end of the series and I actually enjoyed it. I liked how each episode was around a particular character and they were quite self-contained with tiny narratives sort of overlapping. So I really liked that. And it was different and funny, but also quite serious as well. So I watched that.
Yeah.
I watched the very last episode of Major Crimes.
Right.
I was a fan of The Closer, which was Kyra Sedgwick. And then it turned into Major Crimes and Major Crimes had six seasons. And I just think it's really good old-fashioned crime procedural drama. Gutted it's finished, but I really liked it. Quite a good ending.
Yeah.
The lead actress, Mary McDonnell, wasn't in the last few episodes. I won't give too much away in case people haven't watched it. And it was just sort of quite a good resolution, something quite different for the end of a program where the network had agreed and had written a decent ending rather than just not viewing it. They'd sort of properly finished it. So
good.
And just because I'm into my sort of poignancy and sitcom, I finished watching a documentary that Gold were putting out called The Dinner Ladies Diaries.
Right.
Such a fan of Victoria Wood.
Yeah.
And it was just really nice, actually, watching some of the clips, working out how Victoria Wood did it. And it was quite nice to watch and to see some of the actors together on screen and reminiscing on their times together on the show. That was good. That was sitcoms were done well when I was a child. And that was one that was there when I was a teenager. And I really enjoyed that. So
yeah.
On average, I'm about 3 weeks behind on everything I've worked out. I've sat
right.
So I'm behind on all my Shondaland stuff. And so I've got Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder and Grey's Anatomy. Also my Chicago Fire and Chicago Med. I'm a bit behind on.
Yeah.
But I've sort of packaged it all ready to go back with my iPad. Yesterday I finally finished This Is Us. So last night I finished the last episode of This Is Us, 5 episodes into the Save Me. I know we've talked about that in the last podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm about to get to the final episode and I'm a bit gripped, and I have just started watching season 2 of Unreal, and I know I'm going to be talking to someone today on the podcast, and I was a huge fan of season 1, but I just got so delayed in everything that I've got the whole of season 2 ready to watch now. So I'm just starting to watch that today.
Yeah. Unreal is an amazing show. If anybody hasn't caught it, it's on Amazon Prime. It is just brilliant.
It's so good.
I really, really enjoy that series. When we are talking to somebody who had something to do with that show later on. So
excellent stuff. And then I suppose it's on to my film stuff as the resident film reviewer.
Yes.
Who, over the last month, you asked me to go to the Ready Player One screening.
Yes.
I thought, yeah, not a problem. That's okay. And I didn't think much of it. I've been to a few of your screenings now and, you know, and then we're sitting there, we've all ready for the film to start, and someone pops up with a microphone and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to introduce you to a few people." And I genuinely, at that point, Dave, was thinking, oh, they've brought like a screenwriter or something, or they've brought one of the production team, or, you know, there might be one of the actors have turned up. And it was like Ben Mendelsohn. I was like, oh my word, I love Ben Mendelsohn. A round of applause. Ty Sheridan. Sheridan, his face is on the screen behind him. Oh my God, they've got the lead actor over at the moment. This is brilliant. And then the moment, and the man who brought us to us, and I was just like, no, Steven Spielberg. And I think there was this weird applause but gasp in the audience that Steven Spielberg appeared in front and gave a really sort of lovely speech. And they had answered a few questions from the host about sort of like looking back to the 80s nostalgia and what they included. And yeah, it was such a good sort of setup. And as you can obviously see by my review, I really, really, really enjoyed it. And I'm not someone who is into the video game culture, but what I am into is like the iconic sort of intertextual references that Spielberg sort of envelops into his story. And there are some absolutely brilliant bits, especially for people who still haven't gone to see it yet, look out for Chucky. Chucky is my favorite bit, definitely. I was just find that so funny. I got onto a serious chat with a friend of mine who is into her sci-fi sort of movies and books, and she read the original book by
Ernest Cline. I've read that.
And after I'd done my review, and what she found interesting was that Ernest Cline also did the screenplay. And she was saying to me, I'm unsure why Ernest Cline changed so much of his book for the screenplay. She said, because the book's amazing. She said, I love the film, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't exactly to what I wanted the book to be. She says she would love to sit in a room with Ernest Cline and talk to him more. And if he's going to make a Ready Player 2, is he going to make a Ready Player 2 based on the film or on his original book? So she had questions like that. And I'm sitting there going, okay, I didn't realize that.
That's quite interesting. I mean, I adored the book. I think the book's absolutely brilliant. I haven't seen the film yet. I was going to try and get it this weekend and didn't manage to get around to it. But I hopefully will be going in the next couple of weeks to see the movie. And I am very interested to see what the difference is. And I mean, I get why they change quite a lot, because, you know, the book's the book and the film's the film, and it was quite cinematic in the way it was written anyway. My guess is that there were just certain things either A, they couldn't get licenses to, and B, you need to chop stuff out because of running time. So I would say that's probably why. But the reviews for the film across the board have been really strong. So yeah. I am looking forward to seeing it.
I've been really impressed with it. I was on a bit of a roll. Another film that I also gave 5 stars to, because it's sort of so, it can't be any further different from Ready Player One, but a film that really sort of hit me quite hard was Journeyman, Paddy Considine. And when I was in the screening room, it was quite obvious. I think there were two members of audience who were female and the rest of us were men. And the tears and the sobbing and the emotion in that room, it was such an emotionally impactful film told from a very male viewpoint as well.
I
know it's Journeyman. It sounds like I'm trying to do a pun here, but it takes you all on a journey to sort of understand how you would react to something so traumatic, and how you deal with that. And his performance is just amazing. It was just so good. I can't speak highly enough of it. So if you want to do polar opposites this weekend, go and see Ready Player One and then pair it with Journeyman. You're just going to see two amazing films in a completely different sort of context and journeys. And yeah, definitely one that I would recommend.
Yeah, awesome.
I also went and saw, and please, I wouldn't hurry to go and see this, A Wrinkle in Time. And I was so so disappointed. I'd wanted to see it. It was sort of something that was niggling at the back of my head that, oh, I must go and see this film. A lot of people have talked about it. DuVernay's work, you know, should be fantastic with Oprah Winfrey. It just fell completely flat. The storytelling was too complicated. It was a little bit too contrived. There were some things that didn't make sense. I even went afterwards to try and read up on the book and what the book meant, and I still didn't see. And essences, I just don't think it's been done very well, and there's been a lot of hype around it. And if you're taking children to see it, fundamentally it's a children's movie. I didn't get it. It was too complex for me.
Right.
And I don't know how the children would understand some of the ideas behind what's happened to the character's father and where they are. And
interesting.
You know, so I would avoid that one. And the last one I do is a streamed only video, a film called Killing Gunther with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Kobe Smulders.
Yes.
I watched it and reviewed it. And as much as I have not been hugely throwing praise at this film, I still feel people should watch it, because it's sort of, it's an interesting take on this whole hitman genre with a style okay. of Modern Family. So they're, it's like the documentary's being filmed and they talk to the camera, and there's quite a bit of sort of like slapstick sort of humour. And but
fundamentally,
they've sold it with Schwarzenegger and Kobe Smulders, who yeah. from How I Met Your Mother, but they are probably in it the least. That's obviously with a film that hasn't got huge distribution. I can understand when they've done that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there are a lot other ways you could sell this film. So if you go onto the website and read my review, it's also a link to how you can get hold of that film. And I think some people, it's going to have a small cult following. And obviously, we're all thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger at the moment, who's just gone through some surgery and is a bit unwell. But, and you know, this is...
Yeah.
Shows him in a really good comedic light and sort of tongue-in-cheek, taking good. The mickey out of himself, a softer side. But I didn't give it a favourable review, but it's still in the back of my mind as something I keep thinking about. It's like I want to go back and watch it again. So
that's good.
I'd recommend that.
Good, good.
And that's it. I've just been looking at lots of sort of trailers and things that are coming up, and even though I'm 3 weeks behind on most things, I'm looking forward to yeah. Humans, Timeless, Deep State, Silicon Valley. They're all coming within the next few weeks and months.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to them, but sometimes I think I just put too much on my to watch list.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the next month in particular, I mean, Humans is May, I think, but the next month there is about 6 TV shows coming back for new seasons, and you've got 7 or 8 brand new shows starting on UK TV. I mean, April is completely insane for new and returning shows. I've never seen anything quite like it. There are a ridiculous amount of things starting. So, yeah. I mean, we've already started getting some new things coming. Like, I mean, this week I've been watching Episodes because that started again. So I started watching that and I adore that show. I'm going to be very sad when it's finished because it's just one of the funniest comedies I've seen in a very long time, and picks up sort of with Matt LeBlanc having, you know, no longer being a sort of actor and turned into a TV presenter, which is ironic considering he now presents Top Gear. Although he has got a sitcom, and the type of show that he's presenting on Episodes is an awful, awful game show. But it's just brilliant. It's played so well. It's such fun, and I can't recommend that series highly enough. Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. We are talking to somebody related to that later as well. That's just come back for its second season. I've watched the first episode now. It's as brilliant as ever. It's interesting because they've kept all the kids the same, even though it's sort of a year later and it picks up exactly where the other one left off. And one of the kids was a baby in the first season. They make reference to that quite early on. I won't tell you the gag, but it made me laugh out loud when they said that. Because, you know, the baby's gone to a 2-year-old toddler, basically.
Yeah.
So that's back, and it's just glorious again. It's weird, wonderful, strange, funny, and it's unlike anything else that's on TV right now. So I really, really love that show. It's well worth going to watch if you haven't seen it. Billions also started again this week, which is ramping things up even more than between the various different parties. Damian Lewis is amazing in that show, as is Paul Giamatti. It's one of the strongest performances you'll see from Damian Lewis since Homeland. Just absolutely superb. You've got this slight shift in the way the powers of you know, because the whole thing's sort of always been about this battle between these two guys, one being a head firm manager and one being the kind of lawyer that's chasing after him. And both of them have been slightly neutered in this series when we start. So, you know, one's been shifted kind of off the case, and the other one has had all his money frozen, so he can't really do anything. So it's an interesting sort of play on how they're now going to be circling each other and, you know, what's going to happen next. So I'm thoroughly enjoying that. Suits came back, and you know, you can see it starting to position itself into losing those two key cast members, which are going to be losing towards the end of this season at some point, because obviously Meghan Markle's going off to marry Prince Harry, and Patrick's leaving as well. So you're going to have a very different show when it comes back for season 8. And you can see some of the characters starting to sort of bubble up and see them position, you know, how they're going to manage it moving forward. I think, you know, you're starting to see signs of where things are going to go. But that's brilliant. It's brilliantly written. I mean, it's the core concept of it being based around Mike's character. He sort of fell away even, you know, a couple of seasons ago, or even sort of the start of this season. So you can see that they were sort of moving away from that. And it's still one of the best written legal dramas out there. So thoroughly worth watching if you've not caught episodes of Suits. Supergirl is now back again, finally. As I've said before, we're actually not that far behind the US, you know, because of the strange way that they scheduled it over there. So we've got four episodes and then we're basically caught up to the US. But it's nice to have that back along with all the other DC shows. And SEAL Team was the other new thing, which I think started last week, week before.
I think it's 2 weeks. I've got two downloaded ready to watch. I know that.
Yeah. So I've been watching that, which, I mean, those sort of army dramas aren't the type of thing that I usually watch, because it tends to be a lot of them out on the mission and very, you know, gung-ho sort of stuff. And the nice thing about SEAL Team is it is stuff about the missions, and you do see that, but there is quite a lot of stuff about their lives and, you know, how things are affecting them. And, you know, there is a lot more of the kind of meat to the drama underneath it, which you don't always get in those sort of shows. A lot of it tends to be about the tactical things of going in and kicking down doors and that sort of stuff. So it's a very well thought out show. It's just been renewed for another season as well. So I'm very much looking forward to watching some more of that. And David Boreanaz is great, and it's got a really solid cast. So that's been really good. I think that's about it for the stuff I've been doing and you've been doing, unless you've got anything else you want to put in.
No, I think I've covered that. I've covered the most of that, yeah.
All right. So let's move on to some TV and film news. TV and film news this week, we start off with a couple of renewals, a few different renewals, actually. As I mentioned just before, SEAL Team's been renewed, and SWAT, which also is another CBS show, which hasn't actually aired over here yet, but it is coming to Sky One later on in the year. Those two shows have both been renewed by CBS, their US network, so you're getting new seasons of those. Strike Back has been renewed for a seventh season, which is quite interesting, because I wasn't sure whether that was going to make it or not, but it apparently is going down fairly well both sides of the Atlantic, and they're going to be bringing that back again. So don't know what cast they're going to be using, how that's going to run. I don't know whether they'll make any tweaks, but that is going to be back for a seventh season. Channel 4 announced that Humans will be returning in May. We don't know an exact date for that yet, but we have a lot more stuff coming up on Humans when it does get released, because I went to visit the set towards the end of... towards the end of last year, I went to visit the set. So there is more stuff coming up on Humans as we get closer to the actual air date, and I can actually release the relevant bits that were recorded back then. So there will be some interviews and stuff coming up soon. They also released a couple of photos from the set as well, cast photos and stuff. So they're up on the website if you want to go and see those. And there was a pickup announcement. Amazon have picked up Marvel's Cloak and Dagger and The Crossing, which are two interesting looking shows. Cloak and Dagger is another one of the Marvel adaptations. There was one picked up last week by Sci-Fi UK. Runaways was picked up by Sci-Fi UK. Cloak and Dagger is another one with teen leads. It's kind of a Romeo and Juliet situation of two people that are sort of star-crossed lovers that end up kind of getting together, and they become they discover superpowers when they're together. So that looks quite like it could be quite interesting. It's an interesting place for Amazon to pick that up as well.
I've noticed a lot. I suppose this is going to really start happening now. The air date drops and cancellations, a lot of the websites have started getting those pages ready. And yeah. I know that obviously you've got our page on Geektown getting ready. This is going to be the month, isn't it? We're going to have all the news sort of coming through in April. So
It could, towards the end of April, start of May, there'll be stuff trickling in throughout April, and end of May I think is the actual deadline, or middle of May is the sort of deadline, because they have to give a sort of cutoff point of when they announce what shows are coming back and stuff. So it's usually around the middle of May we kind of know every show that's either pilots that have got picked up or shows that have been renewed. So we should hear on pretty much most things. There's usually one or two stragglers, but we should hear most things over the next sort of 30 to 60 days. We'll know. The Crossing, which is the other show, which sounded quite interesting, but that's the other thing that they've picked up, and that's airing this week. So we'll come to that a bit later on as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of bigger news, there's a few new stories this week. One of them was another Amazon story. It was they've greenlit a series from Spielberg starring Javier Bardem, and it's called Cortez, which is a four-hour miniseries based on the epic saga of the Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortez. He's the guy that went and conquered the Aztecs, basically, and sort of stole their gold and various other things. So it's a story about that. I mean, it's not an area that I don't think has been covered that much.
No, certainly. I can't think of anything along those lines.
So it's kind of interesting, I thought. It's written by the Academy Award winner Steve Zaillian, who is the guy that wrote Schindler's List. It's based on a screenplay by Dalton Trumbo, who wrote Roman Holiday. They've got Javier Bardem is set to star in the lead role. He's also an exec producer on the project, as is Spielberg. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds kind of interesting. I mean, yeah, there's quotes sort of talking about how Cortez discovered and shaped quite a lot of the world that we know today in terms of sort of connecting us with South America and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. It's a Spielberg series, so I imagine this is something that will be of interest to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely want to watch it. I mean, I really like Javier Bardem as well. So potentially, I don't know. Sometimes I didn't like Britannia, and I'm hoping it's not going to be too sort of like historic. And I remember really having a problem with period dramas when I was younger. I wasn't always into them and just struggled with them because there were sometimes you had to know a lot about it, or I wasn't willing to learn. I get quite frustrated quite quickly unless I'm reading the encyclopedia or Wikipedia next to it while I'm like, oh, right, that's happening because that's happening because. But I think when it's got something like, Spielberg behind it, I think I definitely would tune into the first episode and really want to see if I would follow it through. I'm a fan of Bardem as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's an interesting one. It's fits this hole that Amazon are trying to fill with going away from having these small little dramas into these sort of big epic things that they're trying to go, which is why they picked up the Lord of the Rings series, and they're looking at quite big sci-fi series as well. This sort of fits into that box that they're trying to build of creating these sort of big, either one-off HBO style dramas or even the next Game of Thrones. I mean, he was sort of bring me the next Game of Thrones.
That's what it feels like, isn't it? Yeah.
So, and I mean, this in itself is only going to be a mini series, but they are obviously heading down that route of trying to emulate the kind of HBO sort of stuff of, big epic series and mini series as well. So, but definitely good people to have involved. Netflix, over on the other hand, have picked up a King Arthur series called Cursed. Interesting people involved because it's from Frank Miller and Tom Wheeler. Frank Miller, I think, a lot of you comic book readers out there will know who Frank Miller is because he's the man that wrote Dark Knight Returns, he wrote Sin City, he wrote 300. He's one of the most influential comic book artists and writers that we've got, basically. I mean, it's interesting for him to get involved in this sort of thing. He has been quoted in saying he's been very interested in the mythological Arthur story. This is apparently going to be based around Nimue, who is the teenage heroine with a mysterious gift who is destined to become the powerful and tragic Lady of the Lake. So it's sort of, it's around the King Arthur legend, but taking a slightly different look at it. And it's almost a precursor to the Arthurian legend because she is going to be the Lady of the Lake. And this is sort of prior to that. So, interesting. Any interest in this?
Yeah, I'm hoping it does. It's more like Merlin that BBC had and less like Guy Ritchie's Arthur, the film. When you look at someone adapting the Arthurian legend, I go back to thinking about how good Merlin was when it was on BBC and it had a real cult following. And it's a story that I enjoy reading about and know enough about to think actually this would be good. And Tom Wheeler, he's sort of like is the complete opposite to Frank Miller, isn't he? When you look at Tom Wheeler's films and his involvement and then you compare it to Frank Miller, you're like, these two together are going to make a really interesting sort of collaboration, I think. So that enthuses me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Wheeler is an interesting collaborator for this because his films that he has writer-producer credits on are Puss in Boots, the Lego Ninjago movie, and The Cape, which was a sort of short-lived superhero series, which didn't do particularly well. I mean, I don't know. It's an odd pairing to me.
Yeah, definitely.
How these two got together, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, it's an interesting mix of people that they've got there. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with it. But they're also writing a book along with it. I think it might be a graphic novel that they're writing with it, and they're going to be doing the TV series at the same time. So, which is kind of quite intriguing, because they're going to be writing both. That's kind of interesting, because that's happened very occasionally, but it's not very often that you get them writing the book and the TV series, and you get the same two people doing both. So we'll see where it goes. It looks like the book is being published in autumn 2019, so don't know when the TV show will drop, but imagine that if they're announcing now, they're possibly aiming for around about the same time for the TV show and the book to land, I would think. So that'll be the autumn next year. And then lastly, we've got the news that the Crown has finally found their Prince Philip, having had a couple of false starts with various different people, because the people that were in the frame originally were Paul Bettany, who apparently had scheduling conflicts with his stuff for Marvel, so he couldn't do it. And there was talk of using Hugh Grant at one point, apparently, which I could sort of see, but I think they found a really good guy for it. It's Tobias Menzies, who is the star of Outlander, or one of the stars of Outlander. He will be taking over the role of Prince Philip alongside Olivia Colman, who's taking over from Claire Foy, because they have this thing that they will be replacing the cast every 2 years. So they, rather than sticking them in aging makeup, they're going to replace the entire cast every 2 years, because obviously the idea is that each season takes about 10 years of the Queen's life. So this is their sort of middle-aged bit. So Tobias Menzies, people will know from Outlander, because he played Jonathan Blackjack Randall in that, and Frank Randall, husband of the lead. He was also Edmure Tully in Game of Thrones. He's been in The Terror. He was in The Night Manager. He was in Rome as well. He played Brutus in Rome. So he's been around quite a lot of very high-end dramas. I think he's a really good pick for this role.
I just saw that. I mean, when I read the article, I went and looked at a picture of him, because, again, you know the name. You're just trying to work out what programs he has been on that I've watched. And so The Night Manager was one that I thought, oh, okay, that's him. And he does really look right. And I think taking over from Matt Smith as well, it's a really good casting. So much applause to the people casting for that. They've done a good job.
Yeah, and like I say, Olivia Colman taking over from Claire Foy, which I think is a smart move. I mean, you can't really go wrong with Olivia Colman.
No.
So the other interesting bit of casting was they cast Helena Bonham Carter as the older, slightly madder Prince Margaret.
Which, you can see it, can't you?
Yeah, and you kind of think, yeah, that works. Yeah, you know. I think that's a solid bit of casting all round so far for the principals. This new series is basically, will span the 70s this season. So it's Harold Wilson, Edward Heath as the Prime Ministers, Princess Margaret getting a divorce, you've got the assassination of Lord Mountbatten. They're also saying that this series will feature a young Camilla Parker Bowles, because it's Charles first meets her actually in the early 70s.
Okay.
Because she's actually been around his life from that early on. So they are going to feature a young Camilla Parker Bowles. You may see a young Diana Spencer, aka Princess Diana, towards the end of the series, because they first meet in 1977. My guess is that one of the threads through this will be them trying to marry Charles off, and that process, I suspect, that will come up this season. And that may be why we meet Princess Diana. I don't know, I could be wrong about that. I mean, you know, but they haven't announced any official details. We only kind of know that because we know the history of what happened in the 70s, obviously. But yeah, first two seasons of The Crown are up on Netflix if you want to go and watch that third season. We don't have a date for yet, but it's likely to either be late this year or early next year. That's all the news for this week. Next, we'll move on to the interview.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The interview this week is with Cynthia Summers, who's worked across a huge range of shows. We've actually spoken to Cynthia before. When we last spoke to her, it was mainly about Unreal, which was what Gray was referencing earlier. We first interviewed her back in October 2016. She's worked on Unreal, Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, Smallville, Bones. The show that she's actually working on now, though, and the one that we really wanted to talk to her about, is Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, which is obviously just coming to the second season. She actually was the costume designer right from the very beginning for this. They're currently shooting season three because they don't want the kids to get any older than they currently are. So they're trying to shoot them like 2 and 3 as close together as possible. The third season will be the last season because they've run out of books and they don't want to carry on past the books. They've already said that they're only going to through 3 seasons of it. She's a lovely, lovely person to talk to. We spoke about, you know, working on such a bizarre and crazy TV show, working with Neil Patrick Harris, who is amazing. She does talk a little bit about Count Olaf's disguises in season 2, but I don't think it's anything that hasn't already been in a trailer. But just in case you've avoided any spoilers for it, then, you know, you might want to not listen to this. But she doesn't really give any plot or anything away that hasn't already been in trailers and stuff. So I think you should be okay. But this is Cynthia. She's, as I say, she's a costume designer on A Series of Unfortunate Events. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, good. I was looking at the date of our last email and it was 2016. Oh my goodness. I can't believe it's been so long.
Yeah. It's been, what, 18 months or so? It was like October 2016, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's lovely to have you back on to chat through some stuff because we spoke mainly about Unreal last time.
Oh, right.
Didn't we? Are you still working on Unreal or are you...
I'm not. And it's too bad. I feel lucky that I got a season in with them. They just, they have a very short season.
Yeah.
And they just they're so successful. They're just picking up a next season before they even air the most current one. So, it's going gangbusters over there. It's great. And I miss it. I miss the cast a lot, Constance and Shiri. But, you know, I've been on this since Girlfriends. I had a big overlap with Girlfriends in the beginning of Lemony Snicket. And this show's really all in. Like, I'm sort of playing hooky this morning. But with all these devices I have now, it's like, okay, I have a video... I'm FaceTime fitting at 8 and blah, blah, blah. So I'm still at home, which is great. But yeah, this show is so busy. It's very heavy. It's great. It's so like not in my wheelhouse that it's been amazing to work on. And
I was going to say for a costume designer, a show like A Series of Unfortunate Events must be just glorious. I mean, terrifying, but glorious to do.
Yes. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's like, and I have to say, someone else asked me that, and pretty much every project I take on, even if it's the next season of the same thing, I'm good until I kind of get there. And then I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this for a moment. Well, probably more than just a moment, but for a moment, and then it's like, okay, all in, and you just have to jump in and do it, which is great. But yes, I'm never not learning on this show, which is really great. I just wish there was more time for it to soak in. And also for us to, you know, sort of all of the photos that have been coming up from Netflix for all the press I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot we had the fainting man at the Vile Village. I totally forgot. And he was so great. And I loved working with him. His character was so great, but there's so many characters and we're going so many places and each place has got its different vibe and its different look. And the kids kind of assimilate into the towns this season, whereas season 1, they remained the kids, you know, they weren't in disguise. And so it's been just a big, we shoot we shoot for 24 days. And at the beginning of this, I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Because, you know, in television, it's 7 to 10 days if you're lucky. Yeah. And, shooting in 24 days. Oh, this is great. We're making a little movie of the week every 24 days. This is amazing. But the volume and just the artistic input from every department that has to blend within every department and the character development, like on the fly or just as it happens in the fittings, is just mind-boggling to keep up with. But it keeps you on your artistic edge on such a high level that it's hard to do it on the budgets that we have.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got the principal cast, which are, obviously the kids and Patrick Warburton, I guess, as well as Lemony Snicket himself. But I mean, yeah, the standout character has got to be Neil Patrick Harris as Count Olaf.
Oh, absolutely.
Just, yeah. I mean, I adore Neil Patrick Harris in pretty much everything. He's just a wonderful, wonderful actor. But the costumes that you must have to get through with him, he must be having a whale of a time, and it must be wonderful just finding costumes for that guy.
It is. And Neil is all in. He's just all in. You know, he's like, he's a theater actor at heart. He does do theater as well as film and TV. And he's such a creative genius. Yes, he really is. And I wish he was bigger than he even is right now, because I think he deserves it.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? He can sing and he dances and he has so much thought behind everything that his character does. And even if he's not 100% there for in the moment, at that moment, if something else is right or triggers him, he like picks it up so fast, you would never know that he was making it up as he's going along, kind of thing, which rarely happens, because he's a little bit method, I want to say, and I don't think he'd hate it that I said that. But we do, the process on this show is a lot like any other movie or TV, but it's, we start with, you know, everything we do. We start with our script and we start with our meetings. But what's different here is we illustrate just about every major piece that comes before you on the screen, and every major piece is everybody from Neil on down to the last background performer that you see. And we create everything. We've sort of done a graph. We've done a pie graph of how much we buy and how much we make, and everything gets broken down. Every piece of wardrobe gets broken down. And for Neil, it's so amazing because he's one of the only actors that actually gets to see the concept art.
Right.
So I send him the art. Generally, I get back very few notes. And if they do, they're always so in sync, which is such a blessing with what myself and Barry Sonnenfeld, who has his hand on everything. He touches everything on this show, everything, which is great. So we're all kind of in sync, which is wonderful. And then Neil, when he comes to his fittings, of course, I never hear them beforehand, but he has a different voice for every disguise. And he'll come in and he'll be Neil for a moment. And he usually comes in with all his prosthetic on, because he likes to be all in.
Yeah.
He's creating somebody new. And he'll say, so Cynthia, and he'll start speaking in the voice that he's going to be putting onto this character. And he'll be directing it directly at me. And I'm so in awe. And it's like, it's a little scary. It's almost like dealing with a schizophrenic person in a way, because he comes in and you just don't know what personality is going to be standing in front of you. But it's such a blessing, because I have this, you know, concept for the character. We have the fabrics, we put it together. Then the body, Neil comes in with the body and the face of Olaf. And then he brings in the voice of Olaf, the new disguise of Olaf. And it just blends everything together. It just like, it cements the whole character, the whole disguise together. And it's so invigorating.
Yeah.
You know, we've had one character at the very beginning, January 2017, the first time I met Neil, which was amazing. We went to LA and we did a fitting with him for his first three disguises. And that was trippy for me, because I was just coming off of Girlfriend's Guy, which is completely different. couldn't be more different. And meeting Neil for the first time, shipping everything, because we're shooting it again in Vancouver, sending everything to LA. And having this, you know, trying to establish his first three evil disguises, you know, when you get into one of those situations where, I guess it's like going to a new job, where the first day on the job is like, you go home at the end of the day and it's been such a whirlwind. You're not sure of everything that happened. But you've got a good feeling it was okay. And then you sort of regroup and try to connect all the dots from what happened there. That happened early on, and that within that fitting, we had Detective Dupin, who is the character, his disguise in Bile Village, and that's the only one out of all the characters that we've done, all of the disguises we've done for season 2. That was the only one that didn't gel immediately for us, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, we kept everybody had a lot of requirements for that character,
yeah.
Including Neil, and it's such a, you know, he's like a scat singing jazz artist detective in Vile Village, which is Western / got this slightly maybe religious bent to the community, and where are the, like crazy, like where are the children? There's no children in this village, and he's there with Esme in her crazy disguise. So it was a little difficult to sort of get that one. And I have to say, we got it 4 days before we went to camera on it, which is
that's cutting it close.
It was the most stressful period of my life, I must say. But I love that character, and I love the way he turned out. And it may be one of the simplest characters, which sort of let Neil be Dupin more than the costume was, because yeah. we rely on the costume a lot for his disguises, of course. And I think that maybe that was one of our most successful disguises at the end of the day. the sewing room is still getting over that. And that's, you know, I don't even know when we shot that. That was sometime last year. but it turned out to be, I think, one of our happiest sort of outcomes, one of our most gratifying outcomes. I love that character. I love how he plays that character. And
yeah.
the way he looked. I think it allowed us to right down to, you've probably seen the trailer, so it's not a giveaway, but right down to the toothpick that's in his mouth, which was in our concept art.
Right.
And the glasses and the hat and the tilt of the hat and the and everything else he's wearing, the too tight pants and the sort of 1970s high rise too tight pants and all that craziness. It was really last minute, but I think it was hugely successful. So
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing with this show is there's so many different costumes, not just because of the detail in the whole world, but because of the disguises for the principals as well. And as you say, the kids are going through disguises this season as well, whereas yeah. sort of last season, they were kind of variations on a theme, I guess, for the most part last season. Whereas, you know, if they're going into disguises as well, I mean, that adds even more to your workload. So.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing with the kids, the idea with the kids in this world is it's their experience, but also their vision and their memory of things. And so we wanted to keep in season 1 and somewhat in season 2 to keep the kids brighter in tone than the evil world that they're traveling right. through. And, you know, most of the adults are dark in tone visually as well as emotionally. And we wanted to keep the kids brighter. And I think that theme carries through all 3 seasons. But as you say, in season 2, now they're in disguise, and we see that their disguises become darker as well by the end of season 3.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the Academy, the first episode of this season, they look like everybody else. And that's the first time we see them out of their sort of 1950s inspired pastel look of season 1. And that's a tipping point for season 2. It's sort of their plateau before they start to assimilate to the towns they go to and their disguises, or even just their sort of subtle hints to where they're going to, as opposed to a full on disguise, which is what happened in Wild Village,
yeah.
which is one of my favorite episodes visually. as a whole.
I'm very much looking forward to this season coming out, because I loved the first season. I thought it was just wonderful.
Yeah.
You're also dealing with the baby as well, Sunny.
Yeah, Sunny, yes.
Because quite often when you're dealing with small children, they use twins, particularly with babies. But you're actually, it's one cast member, isn't it?
One toddler this year, yeah. And it's very tricky. And they went with Presley because she has this amazing expressive face. And even as a baby, you know, there's obviously they do some CG work with her face.
Yeah, yeah.
And her hands. And there's a jelly baby. We call it the jelly baby. It's a creepy, creepy looking life-size baby of her that, you know, when the kids have to carry her yeah. around a lot, they will use the jelly baby, which unfortunately is heavier than Presley herself, these poor kids. But the thought was, I mean, was always a consideration, I believe, for Barry and Netflix. Like, what do we do with these kids? Because in the books, they don't age. And obviously our kids are going to age. which is also why we shot it all together, trying to get, you know, maximum benefit of the youthfulness of these kids.
Yeah.
Of course, the other kids are now teenagers as well. So we're dealing with a lot of physical changes and height changes. And you know what? They just decided they had to go with it because these kids are the Baudelaires. And there's nothing worse, I think, than watching successive seasons of television series, especially, well, maybe especially, where they switch the kids out.
Yeah.
And it's just too jarring. It's like you get invested in these faces and these voices and these. So anyways, they decided to stay with all of the kids. And yes, dealing with a now 2-year-old that has no twin. So we're dealing with, we go through a lot of photo doubles. we've landed on one this season who has been miraculous, who happens to be a boy.
Right.
But Colby is a great little kid, and he's physically a good match for Presley. And we have a full-time second unit on this show as well. We just have so much material to cover. So, and there's a lot of close-ups, you know, a lot of hand inserts of people picking up spyglasses and picking up sugar bowls and feet in ash, and we have a lot of close-ups to deal with. So the kids, especially our hero kids and the photo double kids, work a lot on second unit as well as main unit, so it's very busy for them. And our little guy's just been a godsend because he's game for anything. And there's a lot to go through in season two. There's a lot of tricky costumes for I still call her the baby. I shouldn't, but she's the cutest little kid ever and just kind of really fond of Presley. So she's the little one. And the same with the older kids, you know, they're growing. So we're trying to keep them youthful. There's only so much you can do. I've seen some comments and I'm like, yeah, well, but what are you going to do? And keeping up with their photo doubles as well. It's a big deal because, you know, as Melina and Louis are changing, we've got to change their photo doubles. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. a lot of work. As I say, I'm a huge fan of the show. I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing more of it when it comes back. And the fact that you're having to shoot them all together, because is it 4 seasons they've said they're doing in total?
3. So we're actually
In total.
We're now shooting the second to last book. So we're almost done.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be done in May, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But I think we'll all go on a really long vacation when it's done. It's pretty all in this show, as I was saying. So they all are, but I don't know. There's something about this that's, I don't know what it is. It's just very busy.
Yeah. There's something quite magical, I think, about just the kind of otherworldliness of the way it's put together. And I think it's such a stunning looking show, just so different to anything else that's out there. So, I mean, yeah. And I'm rather glad that they're not moving a lot, you know, past the books, because I'm sure there is a temptation with some shows to do that and go wildly in a different direction and stuff. But it's quite nice that they seem to be sticking reasonably close to things, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, I have heard rumors, but they're only rumors. And as far as I know anyway, and I don't know where to go after the last book, the end. I mean, maybe flashbacks. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think it's nice to have, like, as you say, the books, the beginning and the end, and just it's a nice sort of capsule collection, if you will.
yeah, definitely. So give you 2 final questions that I think we probably asked you last time, but we'll do it again anyway.
Okay.
The 2 questions you always ask is, firstly, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Same as I was watching last time. I'm actually watching Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And I'm late on it. So... I think I started with season 3 and I'm at season 7.
Right.
So that's what I'm watching. What else am I watching right now? Not a whole lot because I'm just working 24/7. But there was something else I've been watching. Oh no, I'm not even going to say that. That's like a guilty pleasure. I'm not going to tell
you. Oh God, you have to tell me now.
The other one I was watching, and which I watch every time I'm in the States, which is on Netflix, I guess, is Versailles.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't get it in Canada.
Oh, can't you?
Or you can get season 1 maybe now. I think maybe it's on season 1, unless I watch it somewhere else, but I just don't watch stuff anywhere else. But, you know, maybe that's what I should be doing, Dave, because I'm... It's all I ever watch is period stuff.
Although, maybe that's it.
Yeah, Game of Thrones may be a good influence for what I'm hoping to get. So, you know, maybe that's coming my way. But
well,
yeah.
They are writing like 5 potential prequels to Game of Thrones. So, you know.
I bet, yeah.
So there is that. You would probably have to move to Ireland, though, as well.
I'd be happy to do that. I'm so game for a little location action.
Yeah,
That's the only way for me to get a holiday.
Well, yeah, there is that, yeah.
It's the work abroad.
Yeah, I mean, you might have slightly covered this already, but the last question is always, if you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Yeah, okay. I would work on Game of Thrones. No problem. No hesitation there. Although I hear it's a pretty brutal shoot as well, and the locations are tough. But, you know, like you said, if I could come in at a prequel.
Yeah.
Maybe in one of the warmer cities.
Yeah. So,
you know,
make sure that you're not on the Westeros up in the north side.
Exactly. That would be amazing. Or something period. I don't know. Anything to do with the Tudors, I have to say.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, I would work on something for that, dealing with the Tudors. It's always, I don't want to say easier, but historically, maybe.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say easy at all. It's never easy.
So. Awesome. All right. Well, it's been lovely catching up with you because it's always a pleasure talking to you. It's great. And I'm so looking forward to this new season and the third season as well. So
we're all heading off to New York for the premiere on Thursday.
Oh, nice.
So which will be great. And then it hits.
Have fun at the premiere.
So nice to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you. Talk to you again soon. Cheers.
Okay, you bet. Bye-bye.
Bye. So that was the interview with Cynthia. I hope you really enjoyed that. If you want to catch the first 2 seasons of Unfortunate Events, they are both available now on Netflix. You can go and catch them straight away. As I said earlier, I've started watching the second season. It's as good, if not better, than the first so far. So I urge you to go and watch it if you've not watched them yet. It's a brilliant, brilliant show. Now we move on to some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week. There's a lot starting next week. There's a lot starting, as I say, the whole month of April. It's frankly ridiculous.
I'm glad I'm on 2 weeks holiday.
Yeah, you kind of need it to catch up with things. Wolf Creek is back for its second season. That's on 3rd of April at 10 p.m. We had a surprising number of people ask about that. It's an Australian show, I believe. But it's coming to Fox UK 3rd of April at 10 p.m. It's about an American tourist that is targeted by a crazed serial killer. I think it started out as a movie and then they kind of made some TV series about it. But interesting sounding show, but it's not one I've seen. The Crossing, which is one of the new pickups from Amazon. This looked really good. Basically a story of a group of refugees who turn up in an American fishing town claiming to be fleeing from a war-torn country. The only thing is that the country is America and the war hasn't happened yet. So it's a really interesting premise for, you know, and a great place for a sort of refugee allegory, I guess. So, yeah, I'm quite looking forward to this. It was one of the ones that when they first piloted it, we kind of put it on the list of shows that I thought might be interesting to watch out for. But that's called The Crossing. It starts on the 3rd of April on Amazon Prime, if you want to go and look that up. Star is back for its second season on 5 Star. That's on the 4th of April at 10 p.m. And then Timeless, wonderful, wonderful Timeless, is back for a second season. That's on E4 on the 4th of April at 9 p.m. I adored the first season of this. It was such fun. It was such a wonderful show. I was so happy when they reversed their decision to cancel it and brought it back. I mean, I don't know whether it's going to make it to a third season because the numbers... the numbers haven't been great. So, you know, as it opened up in the US, but at least they've got a second season and they know there is potential that they might not make it to a third. So hopefully they can tie things off this time around if they need to. I really like that series. Timeless is such good fun. 4th of April on E4 at 9 p.m. for that. The Americans season 6, that's the final season of The Americans. That's coming to ITV4. This has been bounced around the ITV network because it was on Encore, I think, before. And it's now kind of on ITV4. That's on 4th of April at 10 p.m. I sort of dropped out of this when it moved off whatever channel it was on originally. I think it was on ITV TV originally, and I kind of lost it somewhere along the way, and I need to go back and catch up with it because it is a great series. If you've not caught it, it's definitely one worth watching and very topical at the moment with the Russians invading America. Deep State, this is another good looking show. If you watch Fox anytime in the last sort of month, you can't fail to have seen an advert for this at some point because they're pushing it very heavily. 5th of April at 9 p.m. for this. Stars Mark Strong and Game of Thrones' Joe Dempsey. It's an espionage drama. I don't really want to say any more about it than that, but it looks like it could be quite interesting. And Mark Strong is usually brilliant in everything. So,
yeah, looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah, looks like it could be really good, that. Silicon Valley, Bathroom for a fifth season on Sky Atlantic. That's on the 5th of April at 10:15.
No TJ Miller, though.
Him having left the series to go and be in Deadpool and do various other things. That is going to be back, though. And it's interesting. The reports say you don't seem to miss him too much, as from the episodes that have gone out in the US, because we're not that far behind in the US. Yeah, looks good. Madam Secretary, back for the third part of season four. That's on Sky Living on the 5th of April at 9 p.m. There is The City and the City coming to BBC Two on the 6th of April at 9 p.m. This is stars David Morrissey. It's an adaptation of a China Medieval novel, I'm guessing that's how you pronounce that.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, neither have I, but it seems it's one of those sort of BBC adaptation things where they pick up a novel and go, this will make a good show. So I don't know. No idea what it will be like, but that's coming to BBC Two on the 6th of April at 9 p.m. The City in the City, it's called, that one.
It's a bit of a crime drama, I'm reading a little synopsis of.
Yeah, they usually are these sort of things when they do their sort of adaptations, so we'll see. There's The Heart Doctor, or which is otherwise known as Doctor Doctor. This is an Australian drama about a charming heart surgeon. That's coming to Drama at 8 p.m. on the 8th of April, that one. Then Plebs, the sitcom, that's back for its fourth season on the 9th of April at 10 p.m. I keep on meaning to watch some episodes of this because it's been around for a while and I sort of feel like it might be something I like, but I don't know. It seems like a bit like In Between Us but set in Rome, as far as I can tell.
I remember it was pitched like that. I never really got into it. I remember trying to watch like the first episode and I didn't find the jokes that funny, so okay. I wasn't someone to stick into it, so
yeah, maybe I don't know. And then we've got two shows coming back on these, or starting on the 10th of April at 9 p.m. The Resident comes to Universal Channel. This stars Matt Krasinski, who is from The Good Wife and Gilmore Girls. He is a tough and brilliant senior surgeon who takes a new doctor under his wing. That's The Resident. So that's season one of that coming 10th of April at 9 p.m. And finally, Gotham, season four, finally, after many, many, many months of waiting. E4 have now got the license for Gotham, which is really where it should have been or right from the beginning. That's coming on the 10th of April at 9 p.m. as well, which is where we see Bruce starting to accept and sort of turn into the Batman that we all know and love, apparently, this season. So if you want to catch the third season, which never aired on UK TV, it's on Netflix and on disc. That's the only place you can get it, apparently. If you need to catch up, you'll have to kind of go and get a month Netflix subscription and then turn it off again and binge your way through it. But season four, E4, 10th of April at 9 p.m. And that's everything for this week. So if you want more information on all the shows coming up, and as we say, there is a lot of shows coming up, there's a lot of changes, you go and find all that at geektown.co.uk throughout the week to see all the latest air date info. Oh, if you want to get Grey, your Twitter account is
at Grey the Geek.
Yes, Grey the Geek. Grey is with an A, not an E as well. If you want to get in touch with us with your questions and comments, you can email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.